Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loans subject to approval.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're answering your listener questions.
That's right, Joel. This is our Listener Questions Monday episode, where we have five most excellent questions that we're going to get to during this episode. We've got a listener who is thinking about buying a rental car. That's right, buying a rental car, not renting a rental car, which I don't know if we've ever taken a question about rental cars before, just generally speaking, have we?
No, we've talked about the exorbitant price and then how to save money on rental cars.
But as far as a listener who had like a rental car question, this might be the deepest dive that we're ever going to do, well, so far on rental cars. Listener, she has a Roth conversion question, and someone else, they're thinking about using a duplex in order to house hack. She's got a couple questions about that, plus two others. Looking forward to getting to all of these today.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get into it. But real quick, I just want to tell you a brief story in my life that helped me
Joel's
save some money.
Rug.
Yes, so I got a discount on the rug. Notes. Here's the thing. Moved into a new house not too long ago, right? Everybody knows that if you listen to that episode on us moving, and since we've talked about our move a little bit, well, we had a room without a rug. And like the Big Lebowski, we needed a rug to tie the room together.
I bet it was quite echoey up in there. And
exactly.
So you got that rug in there.
Yeah, the house is...
Folks don't think about the acoustics of spaces.
It's true.
I think I probably think about acoustics of spaces way more than the average person.
Well, and I personally, I love hardwood floors throughout a home and then having rugs in each room.
Yeah.
And I just don't like the idea of having carpet all the way through. Not my jam.
You're a hater.
Yeah, I am. And so our house fortunately does have hardwoods with carpets. So we had to get a new rug for one of these rooms where we didn't have a rug for. And it was like the most expensive rug we've ever purchased. It was something like $600 for a rug.
Ooh, fancy.
I felt fancy. I was like, I don't know if I feel comfortable spending this much money on a rug, but we had budgeted for some of the things we were going to need to buy in the new house, and this is one of the things that made the cut. So once we got it, though, we were like, man, this rug sheds a little more than we had hoped. And we're like, man, if we had paid like $300 for this rug.
You're like, I like those cheaper rugs that don't shed at all, that are just made out of plastic.
Yeah, I was like, I wouldn't feel as bad if it was $300, but it's shedding enough for a $600 rug. I was like, this kind of sucks. And so I went onto the website. I was going to initiate a return process. And this retailer, what they do is there's like, well, why are you returning this rug? And so I kind of took a couple pictures and showed them like, hey, you know, the rug's not quite like we had hoped. And so immediately, without even interacting with someone on staff at the website or having to even open up a chat, they say, well, would you like to keep this rug if we give you a 40% discount? And I was like,
40%?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I was like, well, considering we had said we would keep this rug if it was half the price.
They're going to say like 10%.
No, 40%.
40% is a steep discount.
Yeah, so $200 and something, $280 or something like that.
Holy crap.
Refunded to us. And I was like, you know what? This rug, it doesn't feel nearly as bad of a purchase. I don't feel as bad about it now that I got an extra 40% off.
How does that make you feel about just the general markup that retailers are able to hit us with? Yeah. That they're just without any conversation at all, that they're just like, oh, okay, you can have it for basically half off.
Right. I'm like, did I now get it at their cost? Or do they still make some sort of money? I'm not sure. But it was one of those nice perks where I'm like, okay, now we really like the way the rug looks. And as long as we vacuum it, you know, a few times a week, the shedding doesn't look too bad. Ooh. And it's a cool rug, yeah. But I feel a lot better now. Nice. Knowing I've paid $300 something as opposed to $600.
I totally agree, man. Yeah. And so I think the moral of the story here is that it never hurts to ask, because I mean, now more than ever, I think retailers are willing to take great lengths in order to protect their reputation online. And if they've got a customer who's reaching out to them, they're thinking, man, that probably also is going to be a customer who might leave a review for us if you weren't completely satisfied, yeah, obviously. And so their ability to offer you a discount like that, I think that's the mindset to take. And of course, as long as you're not a jerk about it, and granted, you're like typing on the computer, like tick, tick, tick.
Literally interacting with some sort of preset algorithm.
Yeah, and bottom line, I think it's okay to ask for a discount almost
anywhere. Are you a jerk if you yell at the algorithm? Like, what does that make you?
If you just yell at your computer. I think it's okay to ask, as long as if you are interacting with somebody, that you do it respectfully and that you're not demanding a discount and that you aren't necessarily acting like you're entitled to a discount.
Right, yeah.
That's the big difference, I think.
Yeah, so good on All Modern. I'll mention that's the website that offered me the 40% discount. For holding on to the rug that we liked. And
might pick me up a 40% off discount rug here.
Yes. I don't know if that's how it works.
It may not be replicable.
And you know
what?
Don't
count on it, folks.
You never know. The algorithm might like me more than it likes you. So you might get like a 15% discount.
Did you see the camera light click on when you started typing? Yeah. They're like, hello.
They're like, oh, look, he's
at this,
cute.
Look
all
at
right.
this guy.
40% off for this guy. All right. Well, let's get on to listener questions, Matt. And for everybody out there listening, if you have a question you want Matt and I to tackle on an upcoming episode, we would love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple directions there for you to record a voice memo, send it our way so that we can take it hopefully on the next listener questions episode.
That's right. But you almost forgot to introduce the beer.
Oh, I did.
Which we're enjoying.
How can I forget about that?
Well, it's okay. We get things mixed up a little bit. Hey, we can switch it up every now and then. But this is, how do you say this? Schopenhofer? Is that how you say it?
I believe so.
Schopenhofer. This is a grapefruit Hefeweizen. Looking forward to enjoying this one and talking about it at the end of the episode.
For sure. All right, well, let's get to that first question. All right, this one is about buying a rental car.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Eric in Tampa, Florida. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I'm looking to purchase a vehicle for my son, who's about to test for his driver's license. One of the places where I've been looking are the sales outlets associated with the rental car companies. Is there any advice that you would offer when searching for a used vehicle from one of these vendors that's different from the advice that you would offer if you're looking at a traditional dealership or from one of the players like CarMax or Carvana? Thanks.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for that question. And generally speaking, I think any of the advice we'd give if you are buying any used car, regardless of who you're buying from, those pieces of advice will hold. But we will definitely make sure to address some of the specifics about these rental car companies. And real quick, too, just a quick note. Man, what a milestone. You know, the ability to start teaching your son how to drive. Hopefully soon he'll have his driver's license.
It's a milestone I am not looking forward to.
You're probably hoping that cars will be fully autonomous by the time our kids are getting older.
All right, Elon Musk, you have 7 years, okay, before this impacts me. So get on it.
So I hate to get like philosophical right off the bat, and without answering any money questions at all, but do you think by the time our kids are older that they're going to value and prize the physical geographic independence like we valued when we turned 16?
No, I think because kids
they don't care. It doesn't seem like they care because
they're getting licenses in fewer numbers, and understandably so. Like they're interacting with the world through their phones more.
Exactly. Yeah, you see surveys, and teenagers would rather maintain their social media than actually get their driver's license.
Yep.
And like they would rather have that virtual freedom and autonomy and independence as opposed to like real physical, like geographic independence,
which is fine. No judgment here.
It's just
on
really
that.
Interesting. It's just, man, we are definitely living in a changing world. Anyway, I just thought of that. So. But Eric, buying a used fleet vehicle from a rental company is something that I think many folks probably haven't considered before. But like Hertz, Avis, Enterprise, they all have sites that allow you to score a great used car, oftentimes for a lot less money. And of course, the reason that you're able to snag that deal is because those cars have a lot more miles on them oftentimes. But not only is this a plus since you're able to save money, but it kind of also means that you're likely able to get a newer car with maybe some of those newer features as well. So for instance, I just looked up a 2020 Nissan Versa. And this is like not just their baseline, but it had a few letters after Versa, right? That signified that it had extra
Versa
options.
XLLT.
Exactly. But there on the site, it was a lot cheaper. And the reason it was a lot cheaper is because it had over 70,000 miles on it. This car is, you know, barely 2 years old, and it had like 71,000 miles on it, which is, I'm just going to say, that's impressive. The ability to put that many miles, granted, it's being driven every day, you know, to and from different cities, wherever that car was housed. People flying in from all over driving that thing every day.
Sure.
But yeah, the ability to get potentially a newer car, but it just has a little more wear on it, that might be a plus for you.
That's right. Well, so you're talking about how rental car companies, they're really only selling newer vehicles, right? Because they use them in their fleet for a few years, and then they sell them off and they upgrade, right? And so
that's how it goes.
It's one important thing to note is that you can't really get an older car because rental car agencies, they're not selling those. You're not going to find a 10-year-old car, right, for sale on one of those websites, on Hertz, Avis, or Enterprise, or any of the rental car companies. You're not going to be able to get as substantial of a discount because you're looking at newer vehicles, even though these newer vehicles have higher mileage. And we just have an affinity for older cars because of how much cheaper they can be. And so, yeah, we would suggest you at least consider buying an automobile, especially since this is for your son that is a little bit older than just 2 years old. Because you're going to get that discount because the car's got more miles on it. But you'll get even more of a deal if you opt to buy a car that also like looks old. It's a few body styles prior, right? Something that is 10, 12 years old. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Good luck convincing your son that maybe he should only be considering buying a car that is quite a bit older. But that's ultimately the best way to save, right? We just think it makes sense for younger drivers to be driving more affordable vehicles. They might not have all the updated safety features, and that might be important to you. So that's definitely something worth considering. You might feel compelled to spend extra
for lane departure assist.
Yeah, stuff like that. I get those things do help younger drivers stay safer. But you also might be able to find a car that's more like 5, 6, 7 years old that has some of those safety features, but also costs less money. That might be the happy medium here.
That's true. Something else, Eric. Rental cars, they aren't treated as poorly as some of the folks out there might tend to think. You know, like you think, okay, I've heard that the cars that go the fastest in reverse, rental cars, because they're just treated so poorly.
Every travel movie you've seen has some sort of like rental car scene, and you're like,
don't want to buy that.
Do they all get treated like that?
I mean, like there is a good chance that they're driven pretty hard, but most rental car companies do a good job with maintenance. Those cars are typically on these different maintenance schedules, and the companies employ people, and their sole job is just to stay on top of this. Like those cars might even have their oil changed more frequently than your car at home, depending on how much you've delayed taking it into the shop. But still, we would say that getting an inspection is going to be mandatory no matter what. Most rental car companies will allow you to take their car for a couple of hours without charging you. If they do charge you, they'll let you kind of like rent the car for a day at a much cheaper price. Some companies have these programs where if you end up buying the vehicle, any money that you put towards a rental, they will credit you, and that will go towards the cost of the car. But take advantage of these different programs these companies have. Get an inspection done. There's just a lot of money at stake here when you're buying a car, and you don't want to be buying a future headache machine that's going to cost you lots of money.
That's right. Yeah, we recommend that always to get your car.
That's universal advice.
Whether you're getting it from CarMax, Carvana, from a private sale, from a rental car company, get that thing checked out by a mechanic that you trust, because they're going to be able to alert you to potential issues with the vehicle, making it either something that you don't want to purchase, or helping you negotiate the price down, or just alerting you to future issues that might pop up at some point in time. It's also important to mention, Matt, that that another plus to consider when you're buying from a rental car company is that they will often come, the car will come with some sort of warranty, or at least an extended return policy. Like Hertz has a decent policy. Enterprise has, I think, like a 7-day, 1,000-mile return policy, which gives you some time to mull it over. You might be like, wait a second, the muffler's falling off the back. I'm taking this junk back. But yeah, it's still nothing close to the 30-day, 1,500-mile return policy that CarMax has.
Yeah.
They've got the best in the business, right?
That thing is awesome.
Yeah. So we would say be sure to read the fine print to know what type of warranty might be remaining. For example, on Avis's website, they say that most of their vehicles still have some manufacturer's warranty left. But how much longer is that warranty? Does it last for 3,000 miles longer? Those are the kind of questions you're going to want to ask before you sign on the dotted line. And while we're on the topic of warranties, we would suggest that you do not spend money on an extended warranty. They're rarely worth it, and you could easily gain that peace of mind from having a good inspection done on the vehicle before you're stuck with costly repairs that might pop up. And just having more money on hand in savings to self-insure is going to be better than spending thousands of bucks on some sort of extended warranty.
Most definitely, yeah. And also just make sure that you're shopping around, Eric, because, you know, not just on the different rental car websites, but to shop around, you know, like on the open market beyond that, because you might assume that buying a car from a rental company is going to give you, you know, the best ability to save. That actually might be true in a lot of cases, but you still want to do some looking around before you pounce. You want to perform your due diligence. So shop Carvana, CarMax, like you mentioned, Auto Trader. Head to all of these different sites to get a feel for what they have on hand. But then also make sure to scour Facebook Marketplace. Make sure to hop on Craigslist as well. Basically, the harder it is for you to find a vehicle, I think the higher the likelihood of you finding a deal. You can even take it super old school. You can keep an eye out for sale signs on cars where you live, because you could potentially get an amazing deal if you've got somebody who doesn't want to list online. You know, they're only limiting their audience to whoever happens to see the sign. But bottom line, we just don't want you to assume that rental car companies are the best way to go, because they might not have the best price for the car, the kind of car that you're looking for.
Yeah, they might not. It just depends. And it requires smart shopping.
Yeah. And bottom line, too, I'll say that personally, I am very for buying from a rental car company, because our van, Hal, both of our vans, Joel, were named after a listener who wrote in with the best suggestion. I've got Hal, you've got Homer.
That's right.
And Hal was a rental fleet van. I think he was down in Orlando, and I bet he was in running to and from Disney World.
I was going to say, he created so much joy for so many families.
So many memories, and he's provided us a lot of joy.
Yeah.
He had a pretty high mileage on him when we purchased that van, but we've had that thing now for like 5 years. It's been great for us, and I will say, I recently took it in order to get its oil changed, and while I was there, the folks said, hey, have you been the owner for the past 5 years or so? Because there's no records of the work that's been performed. But beyond that, AKA, while it was in possession of the car rental company, all of the maintenance had been registered or had been logged online within the report. And so I just found that interesting, that even though the shop I was going to, they were super top notch, they weren't registering all of the work that they're doing to the thing. And so it's interesting to look back and see the fact that, oh, you can literally see each and every oil change that was being taken care of.
Documented.
And sure, yeah, there's like a difference between like emotionally caring for a vehicle, but then the physical things that need to happen to a vehicle, right? And so obviously, when it's a part of a rental fleet, nobody emotionally cares about the car. It's just one of hundreds of vehicles.
They're not usually naming them.
Exactly. But you know what? The things that truly matter when that car is going to enter your possession, a lot of times those things are being taken care of.
Yeah, for sure. So, and just to mention, the last car we got, which is Homer, was a $5,000 old school 2006 Honda Odyssey, and there was a mechanic that we trusted that in the area who doesn't normally sell cars, but we had just reached out to him to ask if he knew where we could find the kind of car we were looking for.
Heck yeah.
And he said, it's so funny you ask, because there's this family that's been coming here for years, and they just moved to California without much notice, and they left their car here. And so he's like, I've been working on it for years, I have all the records, and you can work out the sale arrangement with them. And we did, and it's been a killer car for us, for sure. And just one last thing we need to mention for Eric, when it comes to financing, we would prefer you not finance a car. Glad you're looking used and not new, but we would prefer you not
use pay cash.
Yeah, not finance this. So if you do, you're going to want to go to a local credit union to get that financing, because you're typically going to get the best terms, the best interest rate. But it's one of those things where save with money, pay cash. We don't love the idea of financing a depreciating asset. But best of luck finding the right car, Eric, for your son. And we hope you stay safe out there on the roads. Matt, let's get to a couple more questions, including one about how to transition into self-employment. We'll get to that one right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues, like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Joel, longer days and warmer weather, it means our family is spending a lot more time outside. It's great. Like, literally yesterday, I was in the front yard, Kate was in the garden, and I was kicking the soccer ball around with a couple of the kids. I'm loving it. But something else that you can do for your family this spring, shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year. Kate and I both have policies in place, and that means we have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to either of us, our family can cover expenses while getting back on our feet.
Yeah, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, by the way, it may not have enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. On top of that, Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
That's right. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week
yeah,
at the
we
beach
do.
Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okie dokie, we are back from the break, and in a second here, we're going to take a question from a listener, and she is asking about what to do with her 401k, but first, let's go ahead and get to that entrepreneurship, starting my own business question.
Hey guys, this is Andrew in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm still waiting for y'all to come to town so I can take you to Edmunds Oast, but in the meantime, I could use some advice. My wife and I have full-time jobs and have been doing some casual side hustling. But we want to get serious about entrepreneurship and transition to self-employment with things like rental properties, freelance writing, photography. But other than forming an LLC and opening a business checking account, we don't really know what we need to do to set up a business and then run it. Y'all have made that move recently. What should we do? What shouldn't we do? Thanks so much for your thoughts and all the great work that you do on every episode.
All right, Andrew, thanks for the question. And I love the goal that you have here, because we would say starting a business is a great thing. More folks should be considering it. And we've talked about the numbers recently, Matt, that more and more people have been starting businesses.
They took some of that downtime over the past two years and were like, now's the time. And for those folks who did that, rather than sit there and binge and watch their way completely through the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies like I did, props to you.
Yeah. You were slacking. Other people were starting a future successful business.
Well, you and I were starting this business, but that's true. Shutting down my other business. And so maybe I had some free time on my hands.
Well, yeah, we think it's a great thing. And the Great Resignation often got billed as people quitting and laying on the couch. But in reality, there was some of that happening, but there was a lot more. I think people wanting to just change their lives and make money in a different way, work for themselves, not be beholden to someone else for a paycheck. And we think that's a great thing. And Andrew wants to create multiple streams of income. And that's something we can get behind 100%. And especially, Andrew, if you're able to pursue some activities that you might enjoy more than what you're currently doing, like, this is the reason to start a business, is if you feel like you can provide value and find joy at the same time with a solid income, that's the dream.
Yes. And in Andrew's case, he's been with us for a minute now. He reached out to us like years ago, and he might be sort of on, I'm not going to assume this, but he might be kind of on the Coast Fire path, where he's able to start switching off, like shutting down one business or one line of profession and start to pursue something, like you said, Joel, that he does enjoy and something that he does find more fulfillment in. And Andrew, if that's the case, again, more props to you. More props to everybody out there starting their own business. But, you know, it's kind of a broad question what you asked here. So we're going to start with some really broad advice. And regardless of which one of these businesses you want to get into, you know, we're going to say that it's crucial to get your personal finances in tip-top shape before you take the plunge. And that's not necessarily because we feel that entrepreneurship and owning your own business, that it's not as lucrative. But in fact, we actually think that the opposite is kind of true. We feel that there is more long-term potential upside if you take some smart risks now. But you'll definitely want to account for some of the short-term volatility that you might experience with your income as you transition. Or at the very least, you know, depending on which route you take, you might find yourself with some additional expenses without the revenue to justify those additional expenses, at least not yet. And so that means that you'll want to be in money gear number four, or even further along, depending on how comfortable you are with risk. And so what that means is having at least 3 to 6 months of living expenses set aside to kind of hold you over, to kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard about our money gears, I know Andrew has, he's been around a long time, but if you've been listening and you're like, wait a second, Matt just said money gears, what's that?
What are money gears?
We have like an order of operations that we've listed out steps for you to take to progress in your personal financial life. And so you can go to howtomoney.com/start, and you can see all seven of those money gears in order. You can kind of figure out where you are and what the next step is for you. And so what Matt's saying is, yeah, you got to be kind of halfway along that path before you throw caution in the wind and quit your job and start your own thing. But yeah, let's talk about expenses for a second, because simultaneously, we'd love to see you spend as little money as possible. Of course, yeah. Andrew.
There might be some expenses, but we would rather you not incur a bunch of expenses.
And this is one of those things that people starting a business overthink. I think they overbuy. They end up geeking out maybe too much on equipment.
Getting all the gear.
Yeah, getting the gear, and they're like, great, now I can start my business because I have all the things I need, all the equipment. But oftentimes that doesn't produce the best results, right? And sometimes it's a waste of money for a business that never really takes off. So what we would say is, yeah, you might have to invest a little bit of capital. You might have to buy some things to get off the ground, right? If you don't have a camera and you want to be a photographer, you need a camera. But if you have a solid camera, but you kind of want the $10,000 digital SLR that is like, I don't even know what I'm talking about, Matt. You're the photographer here. I'm just...
DSLRs are out, man. It's all...
What is it now?
They're all mirrorless now.
Okay.
Yeah, DSLRs were, they were the rage.
Okay.
15 years ago.
So yeah, if you want one of those mirrorless ones and you're like, I've already got a good DSLR, maybe you don't quite need that upgrade.
There you go.
And yeah. So yeah, we actually recommend, Andrew, you going back and listening to an older episode we did with Alan Donegan, and that was episode 247. He's all about getting massively creative in order to spend nothing as you're first getting started. And I thought he just had like a lot of food for thought for anybody who wants to start a business. So yeah, I love that episode we did with him. There's a lot of practical advice there for people who do want to start their own business but don't want to like shell out a ton of money in order to kind of get things going.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that he's going to say something and you're like, oh, we needed to do what we're going to start our business exactly like that, but just the way he thinks about
exactly.
it is that's the sort of big takeaway that we want you to sort of glean from that episode.
Yeah, and one of the potential paths of entrepreneurship that Andrew mentioned was investing in real estate. And what's great about real estate is that it could take very little time out of your day. Like you can do that on the side while you have other passions, other pursuits, but it's also one of the more capital heavy paths.
There are expenses associated with buying real estate.
Right. Yeah. So that is very different than starting, let's say, a photography business. But hopefully you've done a good job saving up, Andrew, for that down payment. That's clearly a differentiator, though, between real estate and then starting another business. I think about them very differently, even though they have some similarities from the aspect that like you're kind of like a business owner when you invest in real estate, but the practicalities are quite a bit different.
Yeah. And the other thing too, like there is just so much that you can do to ramp up a new business that doesn't cost like hardly any money at all, Andrew. First of all, you probably already have some experience in the different fields that you mentioned. But start filling in the different knowledge gaps that you might have by reading a few books on the topic or listen to some different podcasts where they do deep dives on some of the different things you're interested in, like writing, or all they do is they just talk about the photography industry, or all they talk about is real estate. And all of that shouldn't cost a dime. You can listen to podcasts for free. You can check books out at the library. And additionally, like so much of like early on success, I feel it has more to do with who you know and the connections that you're able to make within a specific industry. And so, man, if I were in your shoes, Andrew, I would dedicate a good amount of time to networking and like attend the different industry meetups, you know, where you are showing up, you're talking with the folks that you're hoping to emulate, reach out and ask them to coffee, ask them to go out for a beer, because you're going to be able to learn so much from the experience of those folks who are already in the industry than sitting there and book knowledge is important, right? Like you definitely want to read books, but man, the experiential knowledge that you gain from somebody who has been in it, that is going to be tough to beat, especially too, given that they're likely going to be geographically where you are. And so there might be certain particulars about photography in South Carolina. I don't know, but that is something that you would be able to learn from someone there locally.
For sure. All right, let's get nerdy here too for a second, Matt. Let's talk technical stuff because of course you have to think through some of the business formation elements, right?
You gotta. Dot your I's, cross your T's,
yes,
that kind of stuff.
Exactly. All and right. Andrew mentioned like forming an LLC, which is great. That is a legal designation where we are actually an LLC, our business, but we're taxed as an S corporation, which helps on the taxes front. So you're going to want to maybe talk to a tax professional to see what the best designation is for you. But those are two different things. You want both
of that model though.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so, yeah, we'd recommend looking into that. But your articles of formation are going to happen in South Carolina. And then the Secretary of State will require an annual fee to maintain those records. You can easily get the ball rolling on all of this on a site like Nolo, but then you'll also want to apply for an EIN with the IRS. It's kind of like a social security number, but
EIN,
for your business.
Employer identification number.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. But you'll need that number basically in order to open a business checking account. And Andrew already mentioned the necessity of that, which is true. It helps keep your business and personal accounts separate. Also, insurance. Like, it depends on what business you're starting, but you're going to want to make sure you're covered in that regard.
Yeah. If you do start a photography company, having that gear, like technically it's called an inland marine policy. Like, that is, you're going to want to have that gear insured. Yep. You don't want it stolen out of your car when you stop to get gas.
That's right.
I know somebody that literally happened to.
And so, depending on your real estate investing and how you're forming that, you might need an umbrella policy in addition to some of your other insurance. But so think about that. But taxes are definitely something you're going to want to account for and think about as well.
Yeah.
Because you start making profit, you know, be sure to start setting money aside so you're not shocked come next April with a giant tax bill. And at some point, you're going to need to, once you pass a certain threshold, you're going to need to start making quarterly payments to the IRS as well.
That's right. And of course, if you are being taxed as an S corp, it's not that your business is paying taxes, because all of that money passes through. And so that's just additional money that you will have to pay in personal taxes. But one final note, Andrew, we would recommend for you to not necessarily start all of these different business ideas all at once. You know, I'm afraid that if you were to do that, you might spread yourself a little too thin. And we're all about taking smart risk, but you also don't want to put yourself out there too far. You don't want to get out, you know, too far over your skis. Maybe just pick one to focus on and see how it goes. Yeah. So we wish you the best of luck.
Tough
and
to launch three businesses at once.
Absolutely. While maybe transitioning away from the potential stability that you used to have from a full-time job. Not just like the income side of things, but even just lifestyle.
Yeah.
There are a lot of changes that happen on a personal level when you've been doing something for, say, the past 10, 20 years, and all of a sudden, oh, you don't have that structure. Oh, you aren't leaving the home ever because you're kind of working out of the home office now. There are a lot of changes that can happen all at once with just one business, let alone three.
Yeah, and you quickly realize once you start a business, all of the things that go along with it, and it's a lot more complex than maybe you think it is on the surface. And, sure. And so it's a good idea to not be bogged down in the complexities of three brand new businesses. Work out the kinks in one first while you're getting started. And then, you know, once that thing is sailing a little smoothly, you can move on and open up that second business. I don't see a problem with that. All right, Matt, let's get on to our next question. This one is about converting a work-sponsored retirement account to an individual retirement account.
Hi, Joel and Matt. I just want to thank you first and foremost for everything. I have learned so much through your show, and I just really appreciate, you know, everything. So thank you, thank you, thank you. My name is Chelsea. I live in California, and my question today is, I have an old 401k account with about $48,000 that is just sitting in a Fidelity account. I am considering rolling it over into a Roth IRA, but in looking, you know, I've lost $10,000 in that account just based on what's going on in the market. So wondering if now is a good time to roll it over into a Roth IRA, or if it even matters when. So just looking for some advice on what to do with that account. Thank you again.
Chelsea, thank you for those kind words. And you've got a great question here. First, I'll say congrats on you doing a fantastic job. The fact that you've got close to $50,000 just kind of almost, I know you didn't forget about that money, but it almost sounds like you did.
I felt Uncle Sam vibes when you said that. you're like, congrats to you.
Congrats to you for doing such a great job saving. I mean, she's got this old account from a previous employer. And so that means that is all money that she was able to set aside with maybe her employer's help. Who
paycheck
knows?
Paycheck by paycheck.
Slowly but surely. Yeah. Just over time that she has done in the past. It makes it almost seem like it's not something she's contributed to over the past couple of years. She's almost kind of forgotten about it, but she knows it's still there, and she's going to go ahead and get that thing feeling some love again. You know, like she's not going to neglect that account. But let's go ahead and talk about rollovers and conversions for a second, because they're two different things, and we're going to address both. But before we do that, one mistake that some folks make is to keep their 401k with their former employer when they leave that job. And sometimes maybe that's the best move, but other times it isn't. And the way to determine whether or not this is a good move comes down to the funds that you have access to within your company's 401k plan. Mm-hmm. The funds, the investment options that you have. And so if you're with Vanguard or Fidelity, Schwab, you know, there's some other good ones out there as well. It's likely going to be best for you to stay put. And fortunately, you are with Fidelity. So I wouldn't necessarily feel compelled to make a change necessarily. But if you are wanting to get all of your accounts under one roof so that you don't forget the login for that account. I don't know. Whatever reasons you might have, I definitely understand. But generally speaking, Fidelity is a fantastic provider to be with.
Yeah, for sure. One of our favorites. And Matt, you mentioned 401k mistakes. And there are all sorts of 401k mistakes that people can make. Mm-hmm. One of them being not investing in their 401k. Another one being not getting the full company match. You know, another one being not actually investing the money that you stick into your 401k. Just letting it sit idly by in cash, that's a bad idea too. But one of the biggest things that people do, specifically in a situation like Chelsea might be in, would be maybe to cash out your 401k when you're leaving, which would trigger taxes and mm-hmm. fees. That's an awful idea. So yeah, that's something we want people to avoid. Just putting some 401k mistakes on your radar. But normally, you'd want to do...
The things that you want to avoid doing.
Exactly. Chelsea. And so normally, Chelsea, what she'd want to do is a direct rollover to her new 401k provider, the one that she's chosen to do business with, because if you personally receive the check, you have 60 days to get that money back in and invested before you're hit with income tax on the full amount. So let's say something gets lost in the mail, right? Or you just kind of forget to do this incredibly important tax. You are then charged a penalty as well. So the time is ticking. If you do a direct rollover, that makes it easier for you. There's so much less to go wrong in that circumstance. But again, rolling that 401k over is what you want to do if it isn't with a low-cost provider that prioritizes lower fees. And Matt, there is actually a cool company called Capitalize that helps you do this for free. And we'll link to them in the show notes. This got was put on our radar, I don't know, like 6 months ago. We've mentioned it on the show mm-hmm. before, but we really like how easy they're making it for folks to make this switch. And they specifically, their goal is to get people with these low-cost providers. They're not managing your money. They're just doing this rollover. They're just basically assisting you. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely a cool concept, and I think it's going to help a lot of people make these rollovers happen, going from a company that's charging them egregious fees into a company like Fidelity, Vanguard, or Schwab that is far superior to where their money is currently parked and invested.
Totally. And considering all of the different job changes that have happened over the past couple of years, we do want this to be on your radar. We do want you to have eyes on your different retirement accounts. But let's talk about doing a Roth conversion, which is what Chelsea is basically asking about here. In a down market, doing a Roth conversion can be a brilliant move. That is, if you have the cash on hand to pay the tax bill. And how much that will be depends on your adjusted gross income and that AGI. It's going to be higher in the year that you execute that Roth conversion because you're going to be taxed on that money. You were able to put that money aside tax deferred, so pre-tax. But now, if you're going to move it over into that Roth bucket, you're going to have to pay the tax money.
Speaking of Uncle Sam, Sam wants his money. And so if you make this conversion, he's like, you got to pay up now.
Exactly. But the great thing about converting your pre-tax dollars to post-tax is that you'll never have to worry about being taxed on the money you convert or the gains that you're going to receive forever. I was going to say, for decades and decades, but literally forever.
Yeah. So even Chelsea's cryogenically frozen body, if that technology develops, we'll never have to pay tax again. Uncle Sam gets paid now and goes away for the rest of your life when it comes to at least money that you make from that account.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, the reason that this is a brilliant idea is like essentially we're kind of talking about timing the market, which you're never going to hear us encourage you to do. But basically the reason that this is that this ends up being working out to your favor is because you have a smaller tax base.
Yeah.
The amount that you have set aside is smaller, and so you're gonna pay a less amount of tax on that money. And the other thing too to keep in mind, if you don't have enough to convert the full amounts, the full $48,000, you can do this a little bit at a time. You can do some of these partial conversions. Maybe you can set up, let's see, you got $48,000. What if you set aside $8,000 for the next 6 years? Mm-hmm. That could be the path forward for you.
That could be. But here's the thing. It's also a better time to do it right now because the market's
down, yep.
Yeah, Chelsea mentioned that.
What if she doesn't have the money?
Yeah, exactly. Then you got to kind of plan it out. Space
comes
out
down
time.
To your situation.
But and while it always sucks to see your retirement nest egg shrink by $10,000, like that's not fun. But if you're in that wealth building phase of your life, it shouldn't faze you, right? And I love what Chelsea's doing. She's looking to make lemonade out of the lemons of a down market. Mm-hmm. And a Roth conversion, it kind of can feel like a financial gut punch for a quick second, right? Because you're coming out of pocket with money, let's say that you've been able to save up on the side in order to pay a bigger tax bill. But the kind of gut punch that Chelsea might endure in this year, it's actually going to serve her well in the future for decades to come.
And yeah, so it's sort of like eating your financial broccoli and carrots.
Right.
Like if you know, assuming you hate vegetables, I guess, like Joel does. But you know that this is going to serve
some
you.
Some vegetables, okay?
You know this is going to serve you better for the long haul.
Yes. And so, yeah, we would say this is actually a move that more people should be considering in this current environment with a down market. But again, so much depends on your specific tax situation, your ability to pay a much larger tax bill this coming April. If you're unsure whether or not it's right for you, it might make sense to pay a financial advisor for an hour or two of their time. It can be well worth doing that before pulling the trigger. But for someone like Chelsea, it sounds like she knows kind of what she's doing. And Chelsea, we would say, yeah, if you have the money to pay the tax bill, this could be a great move for your financial future.
Heck yeah. All right. We've got a couple more questions we're going to get to, including that question about a listener who's looking to buy a duplex. We'll get to that one, plus one other, right after this break.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Howdy do. We're back from the break, Matt. You said okie dokie earlier, so I figured I'd go something even a little more bumpkin sounding.
We're going to take it country.
but we've got a couple more questions to get to on this Ask HTM episode.
There's a snake in my boot.
Okay, Woody. And the next question that we're going to get to right now is one about choosing the right high interest savings account.
Hi, Matt and Joel. It's Peter from Massachusetts. I've been listening to you guys for a few years now, and I've really learned a lot and appreciate all the great and balanced advice that you give. In the last 2 years, I've started a new job, married, purchased a home with a rental unit, moved twice, become a landlord, and become a father. Needless to say, it's been a crazy but wonderful couple of years, and you guys have been my guiding star on the money aspect of a lot of those huge life changes. Thank you so much for all that you do and all your advice. My wife and I currently have about 3 months' expenses in our emergency fund, and I was wanting to get your advice and input on finding a new high-yield savings account to put it in. We're currently getting 0.4%, but I see that there are now online banks offering over 2%. A few questions. First, would you recommend just going with the highest rate account I can find? As of today, it looks like both Bask Bank and My Banking Direct are both offering rates of 2.02%. Second, should I just go ahead and open an account, or should I wait a bit longer to see if interest rates continue to climb and I could get a better rate at some bank? And then lastly, do you guys know of any banks that actually do a good job raising their rates as overall rates go up, or conversely are hesitant to lower their rates? It would be worth it to me to sacrifice a bit on the overall rate if I know that the bank will kind of stay relatively competitive and I won't have to get a new account every couple years to get the best rate. Really appreciate all you do, and thank you. Bye.
All right, Peter, man, you are in that busy time of life. I feel like he's taken 10 years and sort of...
condense it.
Yeah, taken it down to 2 years. But congrats on all of those amazing accomplishments, especially becoming a father. We know that those late 20s, those early 30s can be pretty crazy. Honestly, even late 30s can feel pretty insane most of the time with all the young kiddos trying to build a business. But I wouldn't have it any other way. It's simultaneously fun and rewarding and crazy, all mixed in together.
That's like the exact conversation Emily and I had after coming back from our beach trip. And my friend told me specifically to call any sort of travel with your kids, call it a trip. Do not call it a vacation. And I think he's spot on. Because, we needed like a vacation from the vacation.
You don't feel super relaxed after going on a trip with the kids.
But it was still so much fun. I wouldn't have it any other way. But going on a trip with just my wife and I, it sounds like a blast too. But all right, let's keep talking about Peter's question. And, nice job, by the way, Peter, of building up a nice backstop of savings. He mentioned the rate of 0.4%, which was, I don't know, maybe standard like a year ago. But fortunately, rates have been going up for savers. So you can definitely do better, right? You can definitely increase what you're getting paid on your savings. And the cool thing is rate increases, at least right now, are kind of a weekly occurrence, at least from...
Literally.
Yeah, the
it
best...
It seems like it's happening every single week.
The most competitive banks are doing this. They're sending... If you get subscribed to their emails, they're sending you an email once every once a month, twice a month, maybe three times a month, saying like, hey, we just bumped up our savings rate again. We like seeing that because it's been a tough time out there for savers overall for quite a while. And you asked about whether or not you should wait to make this move. We'd say, no way. Put this on your to-do list and make it happen quickly. It's actually not as difficult as you think it might be. We have an article actually about how to switch banks, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But it's one of those things where people build it up in their mind like it's going to be a big deal, and really it's not. Oftentimes you can avoid fees and make more money on your money, and we think that's like a double win.
Totally. Yeah. And Peter, you asked whether you should just go with the highest rate that you could find or maybe consider some other factors. You don't necessarily want to switch to the bank with the highest rate now if they aren't likely to continue increasing rates as the different market rates out there rise. But unfortunately, nobody knows what individual banks are going to do. And so that makes that a tough question. And we've also talked about how some fintech companies, how they may not be around for long, touting their incredible rates that are either too good to be true or that might come back down to earth sooner than later. And so since we don't know the future, we would suggest going with a bank that just has a solid history. And so banks like Ally, CIT, Joel, you've been with Discover for a really long time. Marcus, these are some of our favorite online accounts, savings accounts out there. They all do a really good job of staying, they may not be the best in at the tip of the spear. They may not be the cutting edge when it comes to the high rates, but they're still going to be in that upper echelon.
Yes.
And they also have just really solid, user interfaces. They've got great apps. They've got other nice features out there. So you don't only want to be looking at the interest rates, but because you never know, that top bank who's got the highest interest rate today you know, they may not have the highest rate tomorrow or definitely a year or two from now. And ideally, you're not hopping from one bank to the next. And so you want to look at some of these other additional factors that are going to make this bank a company that you're happy to do business with for years to come.
Yeah, you want them to make your life easy from the standpoint of not having to continually shop for rates, you know, that they're continually going to be in the upper echelon, even if they're not, like you said, in the very tip of the spear, if they're not top 0.01% or something like that.
Yeah, and all the banks that I just mentioned, they're going to basically hold their place. Like, they're going to hold their ranking for the most part. Like, as rates rise, they're going to typically increase their rates.
Or at least they have in recent years.
They
and
have.
We think they will continue to do so.
Exactly.
And we like them for multiple reasons, even beyond just the fact that they might be paying the very tippy top rate.
Exactly.
And we don't want you chasing rates, right? Because you're chasing fractions of a percent that ultimately don't matter all that much. They're not going to make much of a difference in your bottom line. Changing banks once makes sense. Changing banks multiple times a year is just kind of going to be a waste of your time. And what we want you to make sure that you're doing, everybody out there, not just Peter, is that you're going with a bank that is paying you far beyond the national average on your savings. The national average is something like 0.11%.
Mm-hmm.
The big banks are like 0.01%. They don't even care. They're not even trying to compete on this front. So you definitely want to get rid of them. And beyond that, you might just be splitting hairs, right? You might be looking for an extra few dollars a year by bumping your rate up like 0.1%. And so,
This is the savings account equivalent to driving across town.
To save money on gas.
because that gas station was technically a little more affordable, but you know, what's it actually saving you? What's it actually costing you in other ways?
Yes, exactly. In time and in gas to get there. Well, some of the best rates, by the way, you can find them. A site that we go to frequently is Doctor of Credit, and they keep a great list of the current rates that banks are paying when it comes to savings accounts. But we ran the numbers, and even if you have a fully funded emergency fund of something like $30,000, we're just not talking about a whole lot of money here. So if you look at the best rate out there, which is like 2.28%.
Yeah, on Doctor of Credit, that's currently the actual highest
rate.
That's
the best one we've seen. Well, you compared it to CIT's rate, which is pretty great. It's one of the top ones. I think they're paying 1.9% right now.
Yeah, they're kind of in that upper echelon.
Yeah, they're one of the best. But yeah, we're talking about a difference of about $100 in annual interest on $30,000 sitting in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying it's negligible, but I'm saying
it's not nothing.
Right.
But I mean, hopefully you're not thinking about hopping around, you know, hopping banks every single year. And the fact is, you just don't know if they're going to be able to, if that bank, which I'd never heard of, if they're going to be able to maintain their place at the top of the pack, at the top of the list. And you know, Peter, the banks that you mentioned, they do seem pretty solid. They are on the list, but we just don't want you to get stuck with one of the fintech companies that won't be around a year from now in an attempt to score a higher rate that also may not be around for all that long. And so one thing that maybe you aren't thinking about, but that's worth considering, is to sign up for a bank that offers a sign-up bonus for opening a new account, because you may not know what the future holds, but if you know that right now you can score this bonus, well, that's a bird in the hand, right? That's better than two in the bush. For instance, Discover, they kind of have the best of both worlds going on right now. You can snag a $150 to $200 bonus for opening a savings account with them. And plus, they have a great product with very competitive rates. And so that's a way to, I don't know, maybe kind of hedge your bets a little bit to ensure that you get a little extra of a bonus now, while also knowing that you're doing business with a company who is going to be around and who has solid online offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's definitely something you want to keep in mind. And just thinking too, like, what is it that you're looking for out of your bank? Like, I'm thinking even 10 years ago with an online bank, like, mobile deposit was incredibly important for me. But at the time, not many folks were offering that. And so just seeing what some of the different offerings are out there and just making sure that you are going with a bank that is going to suit your needs and that you're not just looking at the interest rate that they're paying.
Yep, agreed. Yeah.
Makes me think about
Discover, like, offers free checks, by the way. And I was like super enthused about that when I first signed up for the account. Now I'm like, I think I've used three of those checks. But those additional perks are worth noting.
You never know.
Because if it saves you, you know, 10 bucks on buying some checks and you're a frequent check writer, you know, that's not a bad additional benefit.
Yeah, the interest rate race makes me think of like the megahertz race of desktop computers back in the 90s, where it's just like, oh man, you got the new 333 megahertz Dell or Packard or whatever the computers were back then.
Or the current megapixel race when it comes to smartphone cameras.
Exactly.
Now I've got 48 megapixels.
There are more things to consider than just that number.
You had 42 in the last one and it's not making any difference because you still take bad pictures. But let's move on to our last question for this episode, Matt. This one is from a listener who really wants to buy a duplex.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Vicky from Ohio. I was approved for a loan in the amount of $146,000. I'm putting down 20%. The loan officer told me that the only way the loan would be approved was if I lived in one of the two apartments. It has to do with points and the loan amount being too low. This leaves me feeling unsure. I don't want to rent out my house, but want the duplex. Any suggestions?
Vicky, I am sorry that you are in this tough predicament. But first, I want to say that I am glad that you're trying to buy a rental property, because a smart duplex buy can create just meaningful cash flow for years to come. It can be a nice part of your wealth building strategy. Certainly not all rainbows and sunshine. You know, it's not fully passive income. Like we said earlier when we were talking with answering Andrew's question, it's got more elements of a part-time job, but that doesn't mean that it's not worthwhile. And I am happy to hear that you are considering it.
Yeah. At one point, Matt, you and I did an episode about the myth of passive income.
Exactly.
And it's just one of those things where that's how real estate gets billed so much of the time. But anybody who has invested in single family or multifamily homes near where they live, where they're actively managing those properties, they have realized the stark reality that it is a little bit more like a part-time job than a lot of the influencers online want to make it seem. And so
we like to take the less popular path, that it's more work than the influencers say it's going to be, but it's also not nearly the nightmare that a lot of people try to scare you off thinking that it's going to be.
Exactly.
As well.
That's our balanced approach to real estate investing. And yeah, and we actually had Brandon Turner on the show a week ago. And hopefully that got a bunch of folks fired up to do more digging when it comes to investing in real estate. We don't want to make it sound like something it isn't, but we also want to say that it is a great tool in your wealth building arsenal. But let's address the problem that Vicky is having, because 20% down, that's a nice chunk of change that she saved up, which is great. And as an owner-occupant, you'll be able to get the best terms and rate if you go in that direction typically, right? That's the magic number, 20% down to avoid PMI and get the best interest rates, as long as you have like a great credit score too. But it sounds like you're not planning to live in this duplex, Vicky. That's not what you want to do, which is totally fine. But here's the thing. Many lenders are going to want you to put down more. 25% is the most common number when we're talking about buying a rental property, like a duplex. And so your loan typically will come with a higher interest rate as an investor, roughly 0.5% higher on average. So the terms are going to look a little different as an investor. And that's, I think, why, since you have 20% down, your loan officer is wanting you to move into the property and not just buy it with a higher rate. Whereas if you were able to bring more money to the table, something like 25% of the purchase price, you should be able to get an investor loan for this property, no problem.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, the best move from a financial standpoint is to move into that new investment property yourself, to move out of your current place. You get to rent that place and then, you know, occupy half the duplex while you rent the other half out.
Yeah. In all likelihood, your cash flow is going to be higher and the terms are going to be better on that loan. You can still get that loan with just 20% down. It's kind of a win-win, although
exactly.
There's a little bit of a loss, because then you got to move out of your house. And
you got to move. And
sounds like that's not what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. But simultaneously, I don't know, maybe I'm not sure what you need to hear from us, Vicky, but if you are in the position to where, man, this would totally be a slam dunk decision for you from a financial standpoint, I'm willing to push you a little bit and say, man, is there a period of time that you can deal with that? What's going to feel like discomfort and what's going to feel like a new area, whatever it is? I definitely understand that personally, it may not be what you want to do. But in this case, I want you to think through the financials, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah. And sometimes, like we've talked about, Matt, sometimes the thing that makes the most money sense doesn't make the most sense for your life.
Yeah.
But sometimes
it's a balancing act.
Sometimes you need to be driven to feel a little uncomfortable in order to progress more quickly in your wealth building journey.
Exactly. But regardless, we would suggest that you start talking to some other loan officers. We want you to get multiple quotes anyway, because even if you don't have that extra 5% for your down payment, there are likely some loan officers out there who will be able and willing to lend you money for this property, even if you stick to that 20% down payment.
Yeah, so it's not like you're bringing 5% to the table. There are still
right.
A lot of banks out there who are willing to lend you the money as an investor with 20% down.
Typically, they're starting at 15%, right? And so, I mean, the 20% is very common.
The terms won't be as favorable, but it can still make sense based on the purchase price and the likely rents for this unit, both those units. It could still be a great decision as an investment property, but yeah, you're going to want to talk to other banks, other institutions, to see, shop the market to find more favorable terms with the amount of money that you do have to put down on this place.
All right, man, let's get back to our beer. This was by Schoffenhofer. which is a grapefruit Hefeweizen. I'm going to say it properly with a V instead of the W. This is an unfiltered Hefeweizen beer with grapefruit juice and natural flavor. And also on here it says colored with beta carotene, which is totally.
So I don't know if this is actually craft beer or not.
what are your thoughts on this one? This is a beer that you enjoyed at the beach, right? Yes. On your last beach trip.
Well, they were out of the Stiegel Radler grapefruit, and I was like, I'm going to go with this thing.
You're like, dang it!
And it's actually
my Stiegel.
It's a decent bit cheaper and tastes pretty similarly. So it's this might be something that I'm going to more and more during the summer. A great beach beer in particular, and a bit more beer-like even than the Stiegel Radler because it has those weedy beer elements. A Hefeweizen.
I was going to say it's a little more malty than what I remember Stiegel tasting like. Like Stiegel tastes a little bit more fruit juicy, maybe a touch sweeter.
Yeah.
Whereas this tastes a little maltier. Like it's got a little more body, a little more of the backbone. And of course, the fact that it's got beta carotene in it makes me think it also tastes like carrots a little bit. But I will say the color is beautiful.
I'm just going to chalk that up to one of my vegetable servings for the day.
I wonder if it does. Because, I mean, beta carotene is like the main thing in carrots that makes it good for you, right?
Yeah, I can feel my eyesight getting better as we speak.
Although there's no, I'm guessing there's a lot more roughage in a carrot probably, as opposed to this beer. But yeah, I think this is a great, like you said, a great alternative to Stiegel.
Don't ruin my good feelings with facts, man.
And I will guarantee that you, regardless, would have good feelings if you're drinking this beer sitting out on a beach with your toes in the sand.
Exactly.
Be sure to check this one out. Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Listeners can find our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com.
And do not forget, please, to sign up for the How to Money newsletter, which is rocking every single week. It comes to your inbox tomorrow morning. If you sign up today, you get that newsletter for free tomorrow morning in your inbox. It is a delightful read, and you're going to learn something, and you're also going to have a laugh. Hopefully at the same time you can sign up for that at howtomoney.com/newsletter. But Matt, that's going to do it. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.